From the Moon Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, some of the worst actors on the biggest stage are now performing at the World Cup. Then Sorry to Bother You is a comedy that's part satire, part social commentary, part magical realism from musician and filmmaker Boots Riley. It co-stars Tessa Thompson.
It's a project that has been in his heart and in his mind for a long time. He made a record by the same title, Sorry to Bother You, to entice people to make the film. And it's been a labor of love for him. And it's like just a little weird, pretty baby that I was like so excited to be a part of.
Later, Boots Riley himself. All that coming right up. We'll start today's show with this. What's the role of acting in soccer? If you watched the World Cup match between Brazil and Mexico earlier this week, you probably remember this moment.
Now, we know Neymar is carrying a yellow card, so he's been on his best behavior because the referee, he knows the referee will not hesitate to deal with any of his antics.
It's again a collision and a coming together off the ball. And Neymar rolling around, writhing in pain.
The image of Brazil's Neymar rolling on the ground in agony quickly went viral. Soccer fans ridiculed his antics in the form of countless internet memes. But faking injuries is a tactic that has become so prevalent in the game that I started to wonder just how much rehearsal and acting goes into it. And in the era of VAR, or video assistant referee, is it even worth flopping at the risk of getting Neymar'd? Bobby Holland Hanton is a Hollywood stuntman and former gymnast and club soccer player. He has done stunts for Christian Bale in The Dark Knight Rises and Daniel Craig in Quantum of Solace. When Hanton and I spoke this morning over Skype, I asked him first what players like Neymar are trying to accomplish with their over-the-top theatrics.
He's hoping that, you know, the Mexican player is going to get sent off for stamping or whatever it may be, is what the hope is there. When you watch it on the TV and you watch it in replay and the ref watches it on VAR and it shows what those players are doing, it should then make the players turn around and go, do you know what, guys, we shouldn't really be doing this, because one, we're getting found out completely when it plays in slow-mo on the screen. And I don't think it's a great look for kids either to follow that.
How does a soccer player think about who he is performing for?
Well, initially, it's the referee, of course, because if he plays to the referee and the referee gives the player a yellow card or a red card or it's a penalty or it's a free kick, then that's the advantage for the team then to then go on and try and score from that. But also, when you're watching the World Cup, it's the biggest stage to be able to perform on and show the world what you can do and how good you are. And the play acting as well, once it's been broken down and it's been shown in slow-mo, it then reveals a lot of truths. It actually shows the players up even more and makes them look even more stupid when it plays on the big screen and you can hear the crowd go crazy because they're cheating.
Right, and obviously Neymar, because of the video review, that has become kind of a meme, his flopping. If video review or VAR is going to discourage soccer players from embellishing or acting or flopping, was there a time when it was really in its heyday, when it was happening far too frequently? And when was that? When did it really become a thing in soccer that people would dive and flop?
For example, you know, go back as far as, you know, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s. There wasn't so much of it. You know, I can't point out straight off the top of my head which player it would have been. But someone like a David Ginola or an Eric Cantona, you know, would dive and they'd be like, oh, that's a bad foul.
Here's Cantona. Finding acceleration. He's got kids with him. Penalty.
It took one person, or Jürgen Klinsmann was another one that stands out that I think would fake a little bit. But I'm not a massive fan of it. I find it is cheating and it ruins results. And it's not really showing a very good example of honesty and actually playing the game to your best ability and showing that you've won through skill and determination and you know, training and practice. It's more, you know, you can win a game by, you know, someone faking a penalty in a huge game. You know, even speaking to older friends and family and uncles and granddads, etc., they'll all tell me, oh, it never used to be like that back in our day. If you got kicked and hit and you were on the ground, then it was real.
You have been a soccer player and an actor and a stuntman. Do you think there are similarities between what those professions hold for you in terms of performance, in terms of what you're trying to sell?
Yeah, I think, I mean, when I was playing football, as you guys call it, soccer, back when I was younger, we'd get lumps kicked out of us and the referee wouldn't batter an eyelid and carry on with the game. I think it's changed over time, and obviously the level of performance has changed. But I'm a stunt performer now. I'm a stunt man in movies, and it's our job to make it look real, even though it's fake. But I mean, for footballs, I think it's a different side. That shouldn't be really happening.
So let me ask you about your own acting, not on camera, but on the soccer pitch. Can you recall games where you might have like done a Neymar, done a flop, pretended you were far more injured than you actually were?
No, I can 100% categorically promise you that never happened once. And I don't think anyone I ever played with did it either, because you're injured, you tend to stay still. You can't really move if you're that injured. So the rolling around, I don't believe either.
So is there a good training for stunts in soccer and gymnastics? Is it all about being an athlete and being able to do certain moves? How would you say the two things are most equal in terms of the training that goes into it?
To be honest, gymnastics is the biggest help to become a stunt performer. I've certainly felt that, and other stunt performers that I know that are friends of mine that also used to be ex-gymnasts will also vouch for that as well, that, you know, spatial awareness, for example, knowing where you are in the air, how to land, all that type of stuff I developed from a young age from gymnastics and took that on to my later years into the movie industry in stunts. There are elements of soccer that helped along the way, I guess, for sure. Pace, speed and fast twitch and quick off the mark, like I said, but 100% it's more so gymnastics and trampolining, and that background that I had has helped me in my career today.
So you have England going all the way. Would it offend you if I said the best players who are playing in England are actually going to go all the way? And that's Belgium.
My heart is, we're going to go all the way. And my head may be holding me back slightly, but fingers crossed. I don't want to get too upset if we lose, but I'm hoping Saturday we can come through, and it's really going to, hopefully it's coming home.
Bobby Holland-Hanton is a stuntman and former gymnast and semi-professional soccer player. Bobby, thanks so much for coming on the show. I hope your squad does well.
Thank you very much, buddy. Thanks for having me.
You can see Bobby doing stunts on his Instagram feed. You'll find him at BobbyDazzler84. Coming up, actress Tessa Thompson talks about the Boots Riley film Sorry to Bother You and code switching in Hollywood. Tessa Thompson seems to be showing up in a wide range of projects these days. Last year, she played Valkyrie in Marvel's picture Thor. This year, she was in the thriller Annihilation that also starred Natalie Portman and Gina Rodriguez. Thompson was in the HBO show Westworld and in the Netflix series Dear White People. Thompson had been in the movie that series is based on. She's also in Janelle Monáe's Dirty Computer, a short film that Monáe released online in April in advance of her latest album. And starting in theaters tomorrow, Tessa Thompson can be seen alongside the singular Lakeith Stanfield in the Boots Riley movie Sorry to Bother You. She plays a performance artist who is dating Stanfield's character, Cassius, a telemarketer in a most unusual firm. I reached Thompson when she was on a break from shooting Creed 2 in Philadelphia. This woman does not stop. And she told me how Boots Riley pitched her on his film.
He had a lot of big ideas that he wanted to talk about, and with this backdrop of telemarketing in a reality that's just a skosh away from our own and set in Oakland. And it's a project that has been in his heart and in his mind for a long time. He made a record by the same title, Sorry to Bother You, to entice people to make the film. And it's been a labor of love for him. And it's like just a little weird, pretty baby that I was like so excited to be a part of.
Hey, young blood, let me give you a tip. Use your white voice.
Man, I ain't got no white voice.
Oh, come on, you know what I mean. You have a white voice in there, you can use it. It's like when you're pulled over by the police.
Oh, no, I just use my regular voice when that happens. I just say, back the fuck up off the car and don't nobody get hurt.
All right, man, I'm just trying to give you some game. You want to make some money here? Then read the script with a white voice.
I think it's a great conceit. For people who haven't seen the film, there is a sales pitch voice that a lot of people in this telemarketing firm adopt, and it's a white voice where people who in the film are African-American sound like they're incredibly Caucasian.
Like this young blood.
Hey, Mr. Kramer, this is Langston from Regalview. I didn't catch you at the wrong time, did I?
That was kind of a central conceit of the movie, isn't it?
It is, and I think what's so delicious about when you see my character, who's called Detroit, affect a white voice is that it's not in the space of telemarketing. It's actually when she's doing a performance art piece. She's an artist.
We will have a transformative experience.
And so there's this idea that, yes, as Black Americans, we feel like sometimes we have to code switch, particularly if we're trying to occupy a space of power. It's like what Donald Glover talks about getting his show made at FX. You have to learn how to speak old white man. And so, as Black artists, we also do that. And I think, Detroit is a character that can be very righteous and have sort of, you feel like she has a moral high ground in terms of Cassius using this white voice, but then she turns around and does it in her art. So the idea is it's not just, we don't just as Black Americans do that, but just as humans sometimes we try to, get in where we fit in and we affect a version of ourselves that we think is going to get us what we want.
I'm going to follow up on that. Do you think there is code switching in Hollywood, especially for people of color and women?
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like I've done my fair share of it without even knowing that I was, certainly.
What would you say it is? How does it reveal itself?
I guess, for example, when you work inside of productions that are inherently misogynistic, or when you happen to be a woman on set and there are very few of you, and so you're in a position of being otherized just by the virtue or vice of being one of the only women on set. You're like the girl, That was the remarkable thing in working on Alex Garland's Annihilation and worked with a primarily all-female cast, is you realize the ways in which you've been positioned on other productions. And sometimes it means that you don't allow yourself to take up space in the same way. And so, I think there's some code switching, and certainly this is changing more and more. And I feel so incredibly lucky that I've stuck around in Hollywood. I'm long enough to see the change, but certainly early on in my career, the kinds of parts that get offered you that just use a fraction of what you actually have to offer, and so it feels like you kind of have to diminish a part of yourself in a way.
On that subject of how women and men are treated differently as actors on set, we talked to Boots about a conversation that he had with you about how he was going to shoot nudity. What did that conversation ultimately come down to?
Well, Detroit, she is a visual artist and also a performance artist. And so he had conceived of a scene in which Detroit gets on stage and nude, she gives this performance piece. And obviously in the history of performance art, there is precedent for that. A lot of performance artists use nudity as a way to evoke feeling, to be provocative, to get attention. And so we had a conversation about the merits of that, just in and of itself. And then also for me as the performer, as the actress, what I felt comfortable in terms of nudity. And we had a lot of conversations, and what it came down to, this was Boots' mandate. There was also separately a scene in which Cassius would appear nude, not in a performance space, but it, made sense in the course of the scene.
This is the character played by Lakeith Stanfield.
Exactly. And so he said to me, it only makes sense for you to appear full frontal nude if Lakeith does as well. And I think what we settled on, A, because Lakeith didn't really want to appear nude, and frankly, neither did I. I think we settled on something in terms of the costume design and conceit of the scene that I think is visually far more striking. This isn't a spoiler alert because you can see it in the trailer. I'm nude apart from three strategically placed leather gloves. And I think it's like visually super, super striking. And certainly for me as the performer, I had so much to do in that space, not having to also appear nude and deal with what that is in a public space and on film. I felt a lot more empowered. So I'm really grateful to work with a filmmaker like Boots that is just like conscientious and not interested in perpetuating like male gaze or any sort of like problematic representations of women.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Tessa Thompson. She co-stars with Lakeith Stanfield in the Boots Riley movie, Sorry to Bother You. It hits theaters tomorrow. You can also see her online now in an emotion picture called Dirty Computer. It's sort of a feminist futurist short film made by musician and actress Janelle Monáe.
I don't want to hide my love. I just want to hold your hand and be the one that you think of.
Yeah, and there's been so many, you know, people that have come up to me and or written me a text message saying that when they saw Dirty Computer, it allowed them to, you know, come out to their family.
I don't feel afraid. Maybe this love will indoctrinate. I echo every word that you say. The way you feel, yeah, I feel the same way. Remember the night.
I certainly was able to have more nuanced conversations with my family, about myself. And so I think, yeah, if these things, you know, start conversations and also help kind of set people free, it's important.
Is there something that you can say in a video that you can't say in other ways? Does one beget a different kind of conversation? How does that work out?
I think there's something really just unifying about, this sounds so trite, but just about music in general. There's just something so immediate about the way that a song can hit us. So I think there is something sort of powerful you can do inside of that. And then also in terms of what Janelle is doing at this phase in her career, you know, she's been someone that has created, in a character in a way. And I think with this record is really sort of letting fans into her a little more and giving herself the freedom to really express things that are more personal. And I feel like whenever you do that as an artist, when you really take that freedom, which requires in most cases bravery, you set a lot of people free.
Dirty computer walking by. If you look,
and I think because the Dirty Computer is a whole sort of emotion picture, is a more succinct idea than just a music video. There's been something that, a narrative that people can really latch onto. And for a lot of people, that's their narrative, you know, that they don't want to be boxed into a space, that they want the freedom to love who they love and to still be members of society and be inside of their family and have that be harmonious. And, you know, I'm someone who's really lucky. Inside of my family, I've always had the freedom to bring home who I bring home, and my family has always accepted whoever I want to love, but that's not the case for a lot of people. So it's important.
Tessa Thompson, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I could do this forever. Thank you.
Searching for someone.
Coming up, the filmmaker behind Sorry to Bother You, Boots Riley, says that to make good art, you have to care about something other than just making good art.
KPCC supporters include Center Theater Group, presenting The Humans, Stephen Karam's 2016 Tony Award winner for Best Play. Charles McNulty of the Los Angeles Times said, "The Humans has come to L.A. at full strength. If there's a better ensemble working in America right now than the extraordinary cast of The Humans at the Amundsen Theater, I'm unaware of its existence. The Humans, featuring the original Broadway company, only at the Amundsen, now through July 29th. More information at AmundsenTheater.org.
After Sorry to Bother You premiered at the Sundance Film Festival earlier this year, Twitter was abuzz with reactions from the 500 or so people who got to be in the audience the very first night it screened. I was among them, and I can say the energy in the theater was insane and electric. The next day, I met up with an exhausted Boots Riley, who up until that moment, the world had pretty much known only as a musician. He'd been the lead vocalist of the Oakland funk hip-hop band The Coup. Sorry to Bother You is his first feature film as a writer and director.
Boots, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I was looking at some reactions on Twitter because I don't really care that much about what critics are going to say about this film at this point. And here's a couple comments. Totally balls to the wall, insane social commentary about the capitalist society we live in. A work of pure avant-garde brilliance, quirky, funny, creative, and f***ing insane. Think Putney Swope ramming into Dear White People and you're maybe 50% there.
Yeah, okay, I'll take that.
Those are good comments. I mean, it seems cool. Like that's connecting on the way you might have wanted the film to connect.
Yeah, I mean, I do read reviews too. So I liked what, crazy is a thing that say because it's like out of the frame of reference that we have. But sometimes people do crazy just to be crazy. Like, look how outlandish I can be. And that can get tiring. And you know, that I appreciated the one, I think it was like Up Rocks, which was like, you know, stuff is called crazy, but they appreciated the story and how the crazy fit into that.
There are a fair number of people who would say we're living in a time of magical realism or things that aren't quite real. And yet your movie, with its whole idea of magical realism, seems particularly well suited to the times we're living in. So in terms of like thematically being prescient and being on top of the mood of the country seems one thing, but stylistically to be kind of on top of how we feel kind of disconnected from reality, the way you are telling the story feels unbelievably apt.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I use the magical realism and the science fiction as ways to talk about, as ways to talk about how reality might be different from what we think it is, right? Like, we get painted a picture of how the world works, but there's someone painting that picture for us. And that possibly, you know, there's a whole nother side that we need to unfold, and there's more to the analysis that's there. And so, you know, I tried to use that to talk about the difference in perceptions of reality. And I'm not talking metaphysical stuff. I'm just talking about, you know, what we're told of how the world works, why the world is how it is, versus these new ideas that we could open up to that would change reality, alter reality for us.
One of the things that I think works well in any work of satire is it's got one foot in satire and one foot in the real world. That the line between the two is either shifting or blurred. That what you can imagine kind of as a fantastical story also has some truth in it. When you were writing and even directing and even cutting this movie, did you figure out where the satire was going to overlap with truth and how much of it was going to be reflective of what could possibly happen as opposed to something that was just totally made up?
So I went to film school 20-something years ago and dropped out of that in favor of a music career because we got a deal. But watching for 20-something years, watching movies, wishing I could make a movie and studying them in that way. And one thing that I noticed, I remember Terry Gilliam talking about Brazil. He was frustrated because he said, everyone thinks Brazil is supposed to be in the future, but it's supposed to be right now. And it makes sense that everyone thinks it's in the future because it looks so different. The with the production design is so different that even though it says at the beginning, somewhere in the 20th century, you still think it's supposed to be the future or something, right? And so I was very aware from every element of it that it had to mainly seem like our world. And that was the line, like, you know, the production design being a little bit off, but not too off. and the performances being real, like no, like everyone is playing their character seriously, like in that regard, it's like a Coen Brothers thing. People believe in their characters, and it might be hilarious. And part of that is because life is hilarious. You know, so I didn't consciously say, here is that line. I just kind of played it by ear. And I think that those are the two main elements that, you know, worked to stay on one side of the line. Because if it goes too far off, you stop caring.
I want to ask you about growing up in a household where people were politically engaged and focused on what was happening in the world and doing something about it. How does that affect what you want to do as an artist?
Well, I think, you know, art is communication. And communication at all levels, from talking to dancing to all that, you're communicating something. And that's what art and language is for. For instance, the worst thing in the world is to sit there and talk to somebody who's talking to you with no f***ing point. No point. They just want to talk. They're talking to hear themselves talk. And then they're talking using vocabulary that may seem flowery, but it's because they like talking and it's been their dream to be a talker. You know, that's a nightmare. And there are artists like that. So to make good art, you have to care about something other than making good art.
Boots, great to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
Sorry to Bother You is in theaters starting July 6th. And that is it for today. I'm John Horn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.